good morning and welcome, everyone, to Live Dharma Sunday for January 13th, 2013. Koyo Kubota here. So glad you joined us. So we win the time.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Dave.
Oh, how come you don't show on my switchboard here?
I don't know. Someone just called on my cell phone, too, to see are we live?
Great. You're
oh, good.
On. Okay. Because I don't see you on the switchboard, but that's all right. We'll check on that. Well, we have, as our guest to give us a Dharma glimpse, I know that the Midwest is, when I checked, having lived in Chicago for 20-some years before moving to California, so don't take this the wrong way, but I always check the Chicago temperatures, especially during the wintertime. And so the Midwest, I know, whenever it gets cold for us, and of course that's all relative, but we always, the weather travels from west to east, so whatever we get, then we send it eastward, and we've been having a little cold spell, and I noticed yesterday's temperature in Chicago anyway was high in the 50s, but today it's like 20-something for your high, 13 for your low, so I always smile when I see that. That's kind of a little humor to start the day. Well, Dave Doyle with Madison, Wisconsin, part of our Lay Minister 4 group for today's Dharma Glimpse. Dave Doyle, Sensei.
Thank you. It's interesting how you started this morning, because that's on my notes to mention that I just got done walking my golden retriever, Lola, and we're right now getting almost up to 16 degrees. So it was a very crisp walk, and it's appropriate because my topic this morning for my Dharma glimpse is hell and the heretic. So we'll warm up a little bit here. I was listening to NPR radio a while back, and the Ira Glass show is on Fridays here in Wisconsin. And he always tells very interesting stories, as is he is a great storyteller. And he was telling a story about the Reverend Carlton Pearson, who is now known in the evangelical world as a heretic. And just briefly, a little background and why this really spoke to me as a Dharma glimpse is the Reverend Pearson grew up very poor in Southern California, illiterate. His family members, his father, his grandfather, were Pentecostal preachers, and his mother would not allow anything on the TV except for the Oral Roberts show. And as a young person, he got fascinated with Oral Roberts, who was one of the first to preach that as an evangelical, God and Jesus would reward you with riches. And of course, Oral Roberts was very wealthy. Fast forward, Carlton Pearson sought him out, became a favorite, in fact, furthered his education through a PhD in divinity, was a very valued member of the Oral Roberts University tradition and churches. In fact, he built his own mega church in the Tulsa, Oklahoma area. He was on the Today Show, invited to the White House, pretty much was on the top of his game as evangelical preachers go. But he was loved and well-respected, and he read Hebrew and Greek and was always searching and always studying to get a better handle on his spiritual life and on his beliefs. And one day, as he's holding his 8-month-old baby girl in his arms late at night, thinking about the sermons and about the Bible, he saw on TV the report in the African nations and how the strife between these two nations caused massive amounts of refugees. And then they showed close-ups of children starving. And it just broke his heart. He started to cry. And he prayed. And he said, you know, how can I help these people? What can I do? And he suddenly realized that in his tradition, these people did not have a chance to be saved. And again, in his tradition, if a person did not know Jesus and confess them, they were doomed to burn in hell. And it's this suddenly, as he's touching his own baby, and as he's looking at this, he started to question. How, hold it, my God doesn't do that. In fact, he really did the math, and he realized that billions and billions of people who did not profess his faith, according to his faith, now would be doomed for a life in hell. Not just a quick, easy death, but forever. This just troubled him. He studied, and he really then came to the conclusion that that gospel was incorrect, that that teaching was not right, because he said, this is not my God. My God is a loving God. In fact, he thought in his self that hell was right here, that we made hell, that in fact the hell that existed for this baby that he saw on TV in Africa and its suffering, that defines hell, not someplace else to go, that we in fact make our own heaven too, right here. And he suddenly realized that this is the gospel he needed to preach. So he did. And he started to tell his congregation, which, by the way, was huge. Thousands of people on the weekends would come in there. In fact, his staff at his church, the payroll was $100,000 a month for the payroll for the staff. Well, preaching this gospel of inclusion, that all religions were loved by his God, and all people made their current situation, whether it could be heaven or hell, quickly got him labeled a heretic. Everyone, all the leaders, the Oral Roberts and all the big TV show preachers suddenly said, don't listen to this guy. He's nuts. This is not right. We love him, but don't even go to his church. He's a heretic. This is not what the gospel tells you. They decided that, in fact, fear was one of the biggest motivators of getting people into their church. You better come here and you better get saved, otherwise you're going to fry in hell forever and ever. But Reverend Carlton Pearson could not accept that. In fact, I'm taking an hour-long interview with in story, and I'm really bringing this to its core. He said that he believes that when he sees people like Gandhi, he cannot accept the fact for him the teachings that Gandhi is currently frying in an eternal damnation. That he said, you know, when you read or hear about young Tibetan Buddhist monks, you know, and their life, again, he can't accept that the teachings on this. And so it got me thinking that, you know, he's paying a dear price for his path. And in fact, he did. He lost pretty much all the membership in his church. It actually went down from thousands and thousands to 200. And to this day, he's preaching in a small shopping mall type storefront in a church that he calls the Church of Inclusion. And that's what he's doing. And so he's paid this huge price because he felt that the concept was of hell was not a destination, but it was actually for him a test of faith. And he did not believe in that way. The best approach to get people and kids' attention is to scare them. You know, the threat of a judgment day is an easy way to pack a church. But it did not sit with him well. And hell could be made today. Your reality is made. And I felt, are there Buddhist heretics? Are there times in our life where we are reading or speaking to or studying the other Buddhists and think, no, that's not Buddhism? And yet, we are reminded all the time that, in fact, I am Buddha. And this is my path. I don't know if I can be a heretic or not. I don't really care, because the Buddha did instruct that that was his path. Be, you know, happy to study it and to see where it fits within your life. And I, like the Reverend Pearson, do believe that I create my own hell or heaven. And so in conclusion, I think there are really great examples of people walking their own path in different faiths. Thank you for this opportunity to give the Dharma glimpse.
Thank you very much. Indeed, that's a tremendous story. As I listened to it, I couldn't help but think about, you know, there are, I guess, labels, stereotypes, and labels such as a Buddhist or Christian, and there's a lot of diversity within those particular categories. So we, this is why we, I think when you're face to face with someone in a social situation or whatever, and you find out he's in a certain category, say religious category, it's easy to do, but we should not succumb to stereotyping people. We may feel we're very liberal, believe in diversity and so forth, but it's very subtle, insidious mental conditioning for anyone. We constantly have to be aware that, to remind ourselves, here is a unique individual. And watch out for the negative power of language and words and labels and stereotyping. I remember at Lake Street Church in Evanston, Reverend Robert Thompson, that's American Baptist Church. And I didn't know at the time that there was a difference between American Baptists and Southern Baptists. I thought all Baptists were pretty conservative, but American Baptists are a liberal branch. And Lake Street Church had a big reputation as a very liberal church. And Reverend Thompson was a unique Christian minister. And every year we had a Living Buddha, Living Christ service sponsored by Lake Street Church and the Buddhist Mid Council of the Midwest. And we would share music or chanting and readings from the Bible, readings from the Dhammapada. These alternated. Reverend Thompson and I spoke from the pulpit. because of the, you know, nature of the double program, we kept our comments short. It was only 5 minutes long. So we and then after afterwards there's a little social hour, and one of the Sangha members of ours said, "See, Reverend Thompson, see, his words were like, were Buddhistic." And I said, "Yeah, that was the best Dharma talk I ever heard when he was talking. He's very humanistic, very influenced with meditation. And we had a very rewarding relationship and bond. He was a high school quarterback, so he was into sports. He was very laid back, informal. In fact, he said, "You know, we decided that you know, because the service was in May, and sometimes when the weather gets hot, no robes for the service. We have to wear Hawaiian shirts." So that's what we did. And he was being an ex-jock. He trying to keep up his fitness, and he would be running along the, in Evanston, right next to Lake Michigan, you know, right near Northwestern University. And that's where our dog beach was. That's where I used to run along the lakefront path and wrote the write-down book. And in fact, Reverend Thompson wrote one of the endorsements on the back, the back cover of the book. But sometimes our paths would cross when we were jogging along the lakefront, and he's coming one way and I see him coming, and we go past each other, and we're always laughing together. And one time he shouted out, "Hey, what's the sound of one leg running?" You know, the next time when we approached each other, I started hopping on one leg, and he burst out laughing. He wrote a book, I think it was, the title was A Voluptuous God. Voluptuous. Robert Thompson. Check that book out. When we did the Thich Nhat Hanh's Living Buddha, Living Christ in our lay minister program, sometimes we brought in an interfaith minister or a Christian minister as a resource person on the last session. And one time we had Reverend Thompson come in and answer questions about interfaith, Buddhist-Christian dialogue and so forth. And the lay ministers were, I think their stereotypes were softened, if not broken, open. Christian minister like this, you know. And Reverend Thompson said, "Well, there's a lot of Christian ministers, a lot of different kinds, you know, different." And I think he was well respected in the community because he could walk the talk, you know. And the World Parliament of World Religions, an organization that started after the 1993 was the centennial of the parliament held in Chicago, because in 1893 was the first Parliament of World Religions held in Chicago. And that was a big affair. That was a part of the, you know, I think the buildings that were left over from the World's Fair. And that's when the Museum of Science and Industry, that building was originally part of the big World's Fair held on the Midway there along 57th Street on the south side. And I think the Art Institute, the building was constructed as part of that. And it was a very big event. And part of it was this parliament where they, for the first time, in a formal sense, they invited all the world's leaders of the world religions in one place for a parliament. And so this is the first time for the general public in the West to see and hear a Hindu, a Buddhist, and so forth. And afterwards, after the centennial in 1993, the organizers wanted to have some kind of permanent effect, lasting effect, not just one big event. So they organized this, a parliament, a world religions organization, consisting of representatives from all the different religions, and to promote interfaith dialogue. And I don't remember how long the term, the president's term was, but the president of this organization for one term was Reverend Thompson, for his tremendous interfaith work. So I think, you know, when you give a interfaith talk, sometimes because of the way in which say that the Christian faith attitude towards those who do not believe exactly as they do puts them on a very defensive, maybe almost antagonistic, doesn't have to be, but attitude when they have to listen to a speaker in an interfaith dialogue situation. And knowing this, usually I preface my talk by saying, you know, it's not just educational. See, there's three attitudes you could take that a non-Buddhist could take hearing a Buddhist. Okay. Well, the first was, oh, they're devils. Now, this is a very fundamentalist view. If you're not with us, you're a devil. You're against us. You're the enemy. And that's been waning over, you know, modern times, and it's not quite so bad as in the past. And there is some interfaith dialogue has opened up where the shift was from enemy to educational attitude, where, well, okay, let's learn about other religions, but even here, you're learning about other religions so that you can compare and contrast and clarify your own and strengthen your own religious beliefs so that you're equipped to dialogue and defend your position. But the third, and I think is spiritual. And spiritual means individual and personal growth. So although educational is okay, there's nothing wrong with that, you know, I tell the listeners, Christian congregation as well, yeah, you can learn about Buddhism and so forth. But there's an option, okay, that you could listen with the motivation of your motivation is to deepen your own spiritual growth. And if there is something in the Buddhist teaching that you could use to make yourself a better Christian, a better Muslim, a better Jew, go for it. Huh? So, this really, you feel the whole room relax. Hey, not an enemy. I could learn from him, maybe. Not just about Buddhism, but my own path. He's not going to convert me, try to convert me, or say that his is the best. Okay. I say, this is real Buddhism. This is the real Buddhist attitude of saying, hey, it's very humanistic, it's helping. Buddhism never takes away, it always gives. Yeah. Buddhism is a religion that can negate itself. Maybe it shouldn't be called a religion. Huh? Philosophy, way of life, whatever. or as we did in one little pamphlet, Buddhism Path of Enlightenment, a purple booklet that's so popular nowadays. On it's 20 pages, only 20 pages, with nice colored pictures of nature scenes with some very short teachings on each page. And on the last page it says, is Buddhism a religion, a philosophy, a way of life, psychology? And big answer, yes. You know, talk about categorizing, you see. We don't have to force things into only one category. And people are like that too. Being a human being trumps dogma, you know, and dry abstract ideals that are out there. And that's a tremendous thing. Well, that's all for today's broadcast. Wow. Next time, we just keep going. And today, we have a very beautiful interfaith day. Thank you.